page 148. For example, propositions which in Europe were the exclusive domain of the labor movement are today adopted by the very forces which these propositions denounced. In the fascist counties, they serve as ideological instruments for the attack on Jewish capitalism in Western plutocracy, thereby concealing the actual front in the struggle. The materialistic analysis of present-day economy is employed to justify fascism to the German industrialists in whose interest it operates as the regime of last resort for imperialistic expansion. Footnote 19, text. In other countries, the critique of political economy functions in the struggle among conflicting business groups and as governmental weapon for unmasking monopolistic practices. It is propagated by the columnists of the big press syndicates and find its way even into the popular magazines and the addresses to manufacturers' association. As these propositions become part and parcel of the established culture, however, they seem to lose their edge and to merge with the old and the familiar. This familiarity with the truth illuminates the extent to which society has become indifferent and insusceptible to the impact of critical thought. For the categories of critical thought preserve their true value only if they direct the full realization of the social potentialities which they envision, and they lose their vigor if they determine an attitude of fatalistic compliance or competitive assimilation. Several influences have conspired to bring about the social impotence of critical thought. The foremost among them is the growth of the industrial apparatus and of its all-embracing control over all spheres of life. The technological rationality inculcated in those who attend to this apparatus has transformed numerous modes of external compulsion and authority into modes of self-discipline and self-control. Safety and order are to a large extent guaranteed by the fact that man has learned to adjust this behavior to the other fellows down to the most minute detail. All men act equally rationally, that is to say, according to the standards which ensure the functioning of the apparatus and thereby the maintenance of their own life. But this introversion of compulsion and authority has strengthened, rather than attenuated, the mechanism of social control. Men, in following their own reason, follow those who put their reason to profitable use. In Europe, these mechanisms helped to prevent the individual from acting in accordance with the conspicuous truth, and they were efficiently supplemented by the physical control mechanism of the apparatus. At this point, the otherwise diverging interests and their agencies are synchronized and adjusted in such a manner that they efficiently counteract any serious threat to their dominion. Page 149. The ever-growing strength of the apparatus, however, is not the only influence responsible. The social impotence of critical thought has been further facilitated by the fact that important strata of the opposition have for long been incorporated into the apparatus itself, without losing the title of the opposition. The history of this process is well known and is illustrated in the development of the labor movement. Shortly after the First World War, Veblen declared that the AF of L is itself one of the vested interests, as ready as any other to do battle for its own margin of privilege and profit. The AF of L is a business organization with a vested interest of its own for keeping up prices and keeping down the supply, quite after the usual fashion of management by the other vested interests. Footnote 20. text. The same holds true for the labor bureaucracy in leading European countries. The question here pertains not to the political expediency and the consequences of such a development, but by the changing function of the truth values which labor had represented and carried forward. These truth values belong to a large extent to the critical rationality which interpreted the social process in terms of its restrained potentialities. Such a rationality can fully develop only in social groups whose organization is not patterned on the apparatus in its prevailing forms or on its agencies and institutions. For the latter are pervaded by the technological rationality which shapes the attitude and interests of those dependent on them, so that all transcending aims and values are cut off. A harmony prevails between the spirit and its material embodiment, such that the spirit cannot be supplanted without disrupting the functioning of the whole. The critical truth values borne by an oppositional social movement change their significance when this movement incorporates itself into the apparatus. Ideas such as liberty, productive industry, planned economy, satisfaction of needs are then fused with the interests of control and competition. Tangible organizational success thus outweighs the exigencies of critical rationality. Its tendency to assimilate itself to the organizational and psychological pattern of the apparatus caused a change in the very structure of the social opposition in Europe. The critical rationality of its aims was subordinated to the technological rationality of its organization and thereby purged of the elements which transcended the established pattern of thought and action. This process was the apparently inevitable result of the growth of large-scale industry and of its army of dependents. The latter could hope effectively to assert their interests only if these were effectively coordinated in large-scale organizations. Page 150. The oppositional groups were being transformed into mass parties and their leadership into mass bureaucracies. This transformation, however, far from dissolving the structure of individualistic society into a new system, sustained and strengthened its basic tendencies. It seems to be self-evident that mass and individual are contradictory concepts and incompatible facts. The crowd is, to be sure, composed of individuals, but of individuals who cease to be isolated, who cease thinking. The isolated individual within the crowd cannot help thinking, criticizing the emotions. The others, on the other hand, cease to think. They are moved. They are carried away. They are elated. They feel united with their fellow members in the crowd, released from all inhibitions. They are changed and feel no connection with their former state of mind. Footnote 21. This analysis also is correctly describes certain features of the masses, contains one wrong assumption, that in the crowd of the individuals cease to be isolated, are changed and feel no connection with their former state of mind. Under authoritarianism, the function of the masses rather consists in consummating the isolation of the individual and in realizing his former state of mind. The crowd is an association of individuals who have been stripped of all natural and personal distinctions and reduced to the standardized expression of their abstract individuality, namely the pursuit of self-interest. As member of a crowd, man has become the standardized subject of brute self-preservation. In the crowd, the restraint placed by society upon the competitive pursuit of self-interest tends to become ineffective, and the aggressive impulses are easily released. These impulses have been developed under the exigencies of scarcity and frustration, and their release rather accentuates the formal state of mind. True, the crowd unites, but it unites the atomic subjects of self-preservation who are detached from everything that transcends their selfish interests and impulses. The crowd is thus the antithesis of the community in the bewildered realization of individuality. The weight and import of the masses grow with the growth of rationalization, but at the same time they are transformed into a conservative force which itself perpetuates the existence of the apparatus. As there is a decrease in the number of those who have the freedom of individual performance, there is an increase in the number of those whose individuality is reduced to self-preservation by standardization. They can pursue their self-interest only by developing dependable reaction patterns and by performing pre-arranged functions. Page 151. Even the highly differentiated professional requirements of modern industry promote standardization. Vocational training is chiefly training in various kinds of skill, psychological and psychological adaptation to a job which has to be done. The job, a pre-given type of work, requires a particular combination of abilities. Footnote 22, text. And those who create the job also shape the human material to fill it. The abilities developed by such training make the personality a means of attaining ends which perpetuate man's existence as an instrumentality replaceable at short notice by other instrumentalities of the same brand. The psychological and personal aspects of vocational training are the more emphasized the more they are subjected to regimentation and the less they are left to free and complete development. The human side of the employee and the concern for his personal aptitudes and habits play an important part in the total mobilization of the private sphere for mass production and mass culture. Psychology and individualization serve to consolidate stereotype dependability, for they give the human object the feeling that he unfolds himself by discharging functions, which dissolve his self into series of required actions and responses. Within this range, individuality is not only preserved but also fostered and rewarded. But such individuality is only the special form in which a man intercepts and discharges within a general pattern certain duties allocated to him. Specialization fixates the prevailing scheme of standardization. Almost everyone has become a potential member of the crowd, and the masses belong to the daily implements of the social process. As such, they can easily be handled, for the thoughts, feelings, and interests of their members have been assimilated to the pattern of the apparatus. To be sure, their outbursts are terrifying and violent, but these are readily directed against the weaker competitors and the conspicuous outsiders. Choose foreigner, national minorities. The coordinated masses do not crave a new order but a large share in the prevailing one. Through their action, they strive to rectify in an anarchic way the injustice of competition. Their uniformity is in the competitive self-interest they all manifest, in the equalized expression of self-preservation. The members of the masses are individuals. The individual in the crowd is certainly not the one whom the individualist principle exhorts to develop himself, nor is his self-interest the same as the rational interest urged by his principle. Where the daily social performance of the individual has become antagonistic to his true interest, the individualist principle has changed its meaning. Page 152. The protagonists of individualism were aware of the fact that individuals can